The Jacksonville Jaguar players link arms with their owner, Shad Khan, in support of players in the NFL kneeling in protest. The raucous debate over players taking a knee as we take your calls. That's just ahead. Good Monday morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9, and make sure to get our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, the NFL rocked Sunday as dozens of players took a knee during the national anthem before games. Shad Khan took a stand, too. What do you think? Give us a call. 549-2937. Then later, you might have missed action in Washington this Sunday. Another dramatic showdown is looming this week over health care reform in this country. Find out what it means for coverage here in Florida. Plus, how the Youth Crisis Center is working to help kids and families traumatized by flooding and dislocation after Hurricane Irma. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Shad Khan and the Jacksonville Jaguars took a stand and took a knee Sunday as the team played the Baltimore Ravens at an overseas game in London at Wembley Stadium. By the way, the team won by a lot. That's not the story today, though, believe it or not. The Jags were the first team to take the field Sunday after President Trump made controversial comments the other day at a rally in Alabama, saying that NFL players who protest racial injustice during the national anthem should be fired. The Jaguars and Khan decided to send a message of unity in response. At Wembley Stadium, before the Jags beat the Ravens, at least 15 Jaguars players were seen taking a knee, while Khan and the rest of the team, including coaches and training staff, locked arms in a sideline show of unity to protest the president's comments. We saw this played over and over again with other games throughout the day. So we're going to begin the hour now with a closer look at the Jaguars' actions, owner Shad Khan's actions, and what this community is saying about all this. Our own analyst Cole Pepper covered the game and the reaction to the players' stance on the sidelines, and he joins us now in studio with more. Cole, good to start the hour with you.
Yeah, it's an early start after an early game yesterday, and you're telling me we didn't want to break down the play calling and the creative use of Mercedes Lewis.
That's not, okay, yeah, that's normally what you would do, right?
Yeah, and quite honestly, there are one of four camps that I think I'm seeing a lot of reaction on this on, and one of those would be, Why does this have to get in the way of me enjoying football? Which we can talk more about some of the reaction coming up. But let's start with how this has all started, give a little bit of perspective and background to where things have come from and gone to. We'll start with Colin Kaepernick because I think that's where it needs to begin. And, of course, that's been a very divisive conversation around the NFL with fans, particularly of teams with quarterbacks who have been struggling. There have been calls from everything from celebrities to analysts to fans saying, hey, if your quarterback stinks, why aren't you signing Colin Kaepernick? And pointing to the fact of the distractions that would come with that and whatnot, including here in Jacksonville.
Right. Kaepernick was the player who initially, beginning in 2016, he would sit during the anthem to protest police killings of young black men,
right,
and saying I'm not okay with people that have killed these other people not to be prosecuted or convicted. So it began that way. Then he started kneeling because it's my understanding he was saying he still wanted to be respectful but also send a message.
Right, and I think one of the big challenges in this is that the first salvo that was fired in this conversation wasn't really clearly defined for a lot of people. When Colin Kaepernick first did that, nobody really...
They didn't know what was going on.
...get it. I don't think he did a very good job describing it. It has since been described a little bit better in terms of his intent, but he made some missteps along the way, including wearing a Fidel Castro shirt at a freedom kind of rally and then having socks with pigs on them, talking about police officers. So there was some that I think put some people off as far as that's concerned. Fast forward now to earlier this year, and the Jaguars had not had anybody kneeling or sitting during a national anthem. There were a couple of Jaguars players earlier in the year that gave the raised fist during the national anthem as sort of a sign of solidarity. And then it all got ratcheted up, as you mentioned, with the president's comments at the rally in Alabama and really targeting the NFL directly with those comments. So before the game in London, the Jaguars players and Shad Khan met, and one of the things that Khan said was that he was offering his support to the players to let their voice be heard in the way that they wanted to let their voice be heard. And let's hear from some of the players and their comments afterwards about what that decision was like, starting with Telvin Smith, one of the team's defensive captains, who talked afterwards about why the Jaguars decided to both link arm-in-arm, Smith and Mercedes Lewis flanked Shad Khan arm-in-arm, and why some of the players indeed took a knee.
We didn't tell anybody what they had to do, but we said we would all lock arms just to show that we support the guys who are kneeling, the guys who are standing. You know what I mean? This is one team, and that's what we just wanted to come out and show, that we were unified.
I was pissed off last night just for the simple fact I don't know the president as a man just like he don't know us as men. And it holds close to home with me because for the simple fact what you say about us, you're disrespecting our moms. I lost my mom to cancer. My stepmom came in. I know she's not what he's calling her. She got her doctorate from Ohio State. When you're 5 years old and you've seen your dad have a gun pointed at his head because he looks suspicious in a neighborhood at 6 a.m. because he's dropping his son off at a babysitter, like, it's not about race. It's not about black and white. It's about right and wrong. I have respect for the military. I have family in the military. I know we are in the military town in Jacksonville. I love all the people that go out there and fight for our country. I love the family members, the brothers, the sisters, the mothers, the fathers, the sons, the daughters, those that are at home not knowing what's going to happen to their family members. But I also have respect for all those people, whether black, white, Mexican, whatever, who done lost their child or somebody else to a police officer. And that's what it's all about. This ain't nothing about pointing fingers, calling somebody right or wrong, or calling somebody racist or whatever. Like, at the end of the day, we just got to be out here and just love everybody. That's what it's about. And I'm tired of it. I'm really tired of it.
All right, that second voice you heard was A.J. Boye, mm-hmm. who had an interception in the game yesterday, and his comments after the contest as well. And as I think we're likely to hear from some of the calls that we'll be taking, I have gotten four sort of categories of people in their reaction coming into this. One being those who feel that kneeling during the national anthem is a show of disrespect to the flag and therefore a slap in the face of the military. There are others who say, no, they're not offended by that. Whether they agree or disagree with the point that's being made, they don't have the same reaction to that. And have separated that. Some who also think that the linking of arms is a completely respectful way to show whatever kind of message is being sent during the national
anthem. And it was intended to be a message of unity.
It was, and I think more than anything, the linking of arms, again, it was not everybody linking arms. It was some taking a knee and some linking arms. And the linking arms aspect of this, I think, was taking showing a sign of unity after the president's comments.
As a way to rebuke the president's
without
comments,
a doubt.
And including Shad Khan standing there, a man, by the way, who gave $1 million to President Trump's inauguration committee.
That's right. And from a football standpoint, you have to wonder how much that impacted the Jaguars' play as well, to have their owner out there giving them that vote of confidence and that show of unity. I'll just give you one anecdotal bit of background on the kind of conversation that's coming in my sphere. On my Facebook page, I posted a picture of myself standing in front of the monitor wall at Channel 4 with the Jaguars and Ravens logo saying, hey, we've got a lot to talk about tonight on the Mark Brunell Show. Come join us. Nothing political, no lean one way or another. That, like so many social media strings, just exploded with a debate among other people talking about this conversation. With almost no comments about football. So this has really taken over the story.
It really has. It's gone way beyond the playing field, because this gets to the very heart of the divisions in this country that we're seeing play out through professional sports. And as you said, Cole, this began with one player who's still a free agent, hasn't been signed. Some say because owners might see him as too controversial, Colin Kaepernick. And it's been remarkable to watch the way more and more players are now embarking and being part of this protest. And as I listened to the portions of the interview you got from some of the players, for them, And I'm fully aware of the divisions you're talking about, where people, many people, particularly many white Americans, see these protests as disrespectful to the flag and to the military. For these players and for black men in America, this is a way to try to enlighten white Americans about the fact that the promise of America, even if you're a privileged professional athlete, for them, they don't believe that promise has been fulfilled, because they perceive that once they leave the football stadium, they're just as at risk of being involved in a potentially deadly altercation with law enforcement as any other young black man. And so that, to me, is what I'm hearing from the players.
Yeah, and there was an instance just a couple of weeks ago involving a player for Seattle, Michael Bennett, who was taken down by police after they thought that he was had committed a crime or
mistaken identity
situation. Some would say that is, you know, kind of at the core of this as well, is you know, of how police operate. To me, the most compelling sports storyline on this is, how is this going to impact the NFL, the business,
right,
of the NFL?
And did Khan make a mistake from a business perspective by taking that stand on the sidelines? I'm seeing a lot of discussion on social media of people saying, well, I'm canceling my tickets, I'll never go to a game again,
right,
et cetera.
There were people burning their season tickets on, you know, Facebook Live videos. We'll see what, you know, see what happens to TV ratings. We'll see what happens to attendance. Those are two metrics we can really follow here in the coming weeks to see how this is impacting the business of the NFL.
Okay. Lots of calls as we speak with our own regular sports analyst, Cole Pepper. What do you think about the take a knee movement among NFL players? What did you think of the Jaguars sideline stand on Sunday, including owner Shad Khan, the first NFL owner to visually take such a strong stand in this issue? Lots of calls. Let's begin with Wells in Atlantic Beach. Wells, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. I think we need to take a broader view of what Trump is really doing. He's fomenting the continuation of racial divide in America. You know, and we need to understand that what his and his cabinet in corporate America are doing is dismantling our government. And while he's out front with the white supremacy move, they're in the background trying to dismantle healthcare, EPA. They want to continue police brutality. They want to cut Social Security benefits. They've already ended many programs that directly affect the African-American community. And I'd like to say one thing before I get off. I'm 71 years old. I'm African-American. Donald Trump is 71 years old and white. I'm 71 years old, and I lived in Queens, where he lived, where his father was a member of the KKK. I was called to service during the draft and went, and he didn't. So when you talk about patriotism and the flag, who is he really talking about? He's talking about himself. Thank you.
Okay. I realize that there are going to be a lot of strong opinions expressed on the phone lines this morning, and I'm going to just get through as many calls as I can. You might not agree with what every caller has to say, but everyone's going to get a voice. Joey in downtown Jacksonville. Go ahead, Joey. Go ahead, Joey. Okay, give us a call back. Ed is in Orange Park. Hello, Ed.
Yes, hi. First, this has nothing to do with Trump or with race or whatever cause anybody. Everybody has a cause. And everybody thinks their cause is right, and it might be. The problem here is that's what the polls are showing. It's a total disrespect, taking the knee part. Standing up is a totally different point of view. If they want to take a knee in protest after the national anthem and do that for the entire game and take half of their multi-million-dollar earning and donate it to whatever cause they feel is right, nobody has a problem with that. And then have a big press conference and say anything you want to. It's disrespectful against the flag and against everything that it stands for, this nation. And that is the problem. Otherwise, everybody's going to come up with a cause, a very good cause, and do the same thing. Your cause is not necessarily feel better to the other guy who has a different opinion or another cause. When are we going to stop this? Let's be respectful to the flag. And after the 3 minutes, all the Texas 3 minutes, express yourself with whatever way you want to for the next hour and a half of the game.
All right, Ed, thanks. You know, it's interesting to note that initially Kaepernick started kneeling because he was trying to be, in his words, he was still trying to be strike a respectful pose while still protesting. But many Americans interpret the kneeling as disrespectful.
Yeah, and I think you have a lot of kind of a sliding scale of how disrespectful people see that as being. I would also say that some of the comments that you're seeing are things from on both sides, from veterans
right.
and from military members who are split on this.
They
subject.
Are. You'll hear veterans say this is disrespecting men and women who fought and died for this country. Other veterans say, well, I went to war to support the right of Americans to engage in peaceful protest, of free speech. So, yeah. Richard on the north side. Hello, Richard. Go ahead.
Hey, Melissa. I'm hearing the word disrespect a lot. What bothers me most is I've never heard the word disrespect when a group of white people protest the funerals of veterans because they disagree. Or they take the American flag out altogether and replace it with the Confederate flag. That's not disrespectful. I don't hear even the abortion debate. It's pro-life and pro-choice, just two. Nobody has ever called those disrespectful. But whenever black folk protest, it gets chopped up and dissected as to what's disrespectful, what's the best way to do it, what's the right time to do it, whether it should be violent or nonviolent or anything like that. Black folk are so entrenched into a subcategory of people in this nation that we can't even begin to raise the head of our children. It's hard for me to talk to children in our community and get them to hold their head up and get them to understand that somebody's going to look at you and look down on you. The perfect example of this, Donald Trump is literally telling people, burn your ticket, and his base is doing it. Jacksonville is 30% of the population. For any white folk who want to burn your tickets, I want to let you know that there's a black person who can afford to buy your seats. So for every white person that moves out, just another black person that moves in. We're in a different category of time now. And I'll say this, white flight doesn't work anymore. You just can't move out to punish black people. You can't do that anymore. But this drives it home. Donald Trump has literally told people to not watch the game, to walk out of the stadium, to destroy the NFL and bring them to their knees. Oprah said, that's it. I'll never eat beef again. That's all she said. And she got sued. And there is a law that is written right now by Congress as a result that says you can't say anything disparagingly about food. That's when a black person speaks out. If nothing speaks white privilege to the people in this nation, it's the fact that Donald Trump gets the bully pulpit and actually gets to be a bully. And yet we're talking about what's appropriate for a child that has been shot in the back of the head by a security guard or a police officer who shot him within 3 seconds of arriving because somebody said he has a gun. Now, if we can't focus on what's really happening, if we want to go chasing this rabbit down a hole about disrespect, then we're all lying to each other. What we need to do is say black folk are not treated equal in this country and ask the question why. And everything else is just a waste of time. So I would rather not listen to the radio or watch the news or do anything. I'll just go and continue to work with kids in my community and pray that when they drive outside of the community, they don't get shot. Because that's really where we are. But this conversation about what's appropriate and disrespectful and kneeling and all of that is a waste of time. We're losing focus. Black people are not the same in this country. And why? That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Richard.
I think one of the points that continues to be brought out here is to ask the question, why did you kneel? Why did you link arms? We'll have a chance to talk more this week with Jaguars players. They're the only media availability today mm-hmm. is a conference call with Doug Marrone at 6 p.m. because of the travel back from London. So I think the positive of all this is if
it's drawing attention to.
Let's ask the question.
Yeah.
Let's continue
Which
that
is
conversation.
That is the purpose, is to try to get sports fans and Americans to focus on why the players are doing this. And I think Richard expressed that. From a black guy's point of view, this is why.
Yeah, and again, remember, the NFL is the biggest television show in the country. Every week, the NFL has the highest ratings, and the Super Bowl is the most watched program every year. That's why this kind of platform has this kind of power.
John on the South Side. Go ahead, John.
Yes, hi, Melissa. I'm retired military myself. And as far as patriotism, I think participation in voicing your opinion is patriotism. We would never stop the Vietnam War if we didn't get out in the streets and start voicing our opinion. And I agree 100% with what's going on with the knee. And I think the athletes are leading the way. I think the people need to follow up. And what I mean by that is basically when at the city council meeting, they do a pledge of allegiance. Myself, I cannot pledge allegiance to a flag or a country that still has systematic racism. So I think we need to take it to the next step and maybe go to city council meeting and take a knee and bring that to the attention of our city that we got a lot of work to do here.
All right. Mark is on the west side. Hello, Mark. Good morning. Mark, go ahead. Mark, we can't hear you, man. Mark, try again. I'm sorry, Mark. Please call back. Tom on the west side. Hello, Tom. What do you think?
Yes, I just wanted to say that for the first time, I actually feel good. I'm impressed by Chad Tom. I'm glad that the NFL is showing solidarity. I'm one of those veterans that believes in freedom of speech. I think that's one of the things I serve to protect is our American values. I'm just so happy. I mean, after all the divisiveness of Trump, it's good to see that a group of people can still come together in this country. And that's my take on this.
Okay, thanks. And let me just get a few of your social media comments on the air. Anna emails the show. I'm in support of this. It's a civil, peaceful protest against police brutality and inequality experienced by black and brown people. It's not meant as disrespect, but comes from a place of fairness and love. Many veterans have expressed unity with the Take a Knee movement. And she has a lot more to say there, but that's the gist of it. Brittany tweets the show, "Our country's origin story is rooted in dissent. These NFL players are continuing that peacefully. This is not disrespect." On our Facebook page, Frank writes, "This is not disrespecting the flag, but respecting human life and equality." And so lots of strong opinions. Those are all people in support of the players. However, on my personal page, Cole, I asked people to weigh in on Sunday and just dozens and dozens of comments. And overwhelmingly, people fell into the camps of either I support Shad Khan and the players, or I am burning my season tickets and I am never going to an NFL game again. I think this is disrespectful. And so these divisions are stark.
I don't think, Melissa, by the way, that we can paint with a broad brush how military people, either current or retired, are reacting to this.
That's
because
right.
It's as divided as it is among civilians that some see this as a shot at the military via the flag. Some do not. And so to say that broadly to say that that people are reacting one way or another, I don't think is an accurate portrayal of what's going on here. And again, this is very fresh for a lot of people because it just happened yesterday, not just with the Jaguars games, but in a number of games around the National Football
League.
And
didn't the Steelers just not take the field at all during the anthem?
Yeah, the Steelers stayed in the locker room, but for one Steelers player who was a veteran of Afghanistan who came out from the locker room, put his hand over his heart, and stood
alone
just outside the tunnel for the locker room for the national anthem. There were other teams that had slightly different approaches. But again, these are 32 different businesses in the NFL with 32 different owners and different head coaches with different mentalities, and the locker rooms are always different from one to the next.
Except for one difference here in Jacksonville. The owner of the Jaguars, Shad Khan, is the only non-white owner.
That's right.
He's also an immigrant. He is also a Muslim. He has had the experience of being a brown guy in America. How much of that, his background, do you think played into his decision to link arms with his players?
Well, only Shad could say that for sure, but you would have to think that his perspective is unique among NFL owners because of his background. And again, how that is going to be seen by other players around the league, if that impacts the way that this organization is seen by others around the league remains to be seen, but I think it certainly could do that.
And we've got lots of games to go.
Yeah, just only three games in, 13 more games to play. And by the way, the Jaguars are tied for first in the AFC South. So
yeah, and
lost in all this.
That got lost in all this, that they had one heck of a game.
They did. 44-7 victory, dominated the Baltimore Ravens, third straight win in London. Blake Bortles threw four touchdown passes. Yes, Blake Bortles. Mercedes Lewis, who didn't have a catch all year long, caught three touchdown passes yesterday. It was a dominating performance. Not a lot of people will be talking about the Jaguars' performance between, within the sidelines. It'll be what happened on the sideline. It gets most of the heat.
We'll continue to follow it, and we so value your insights. Thank you so much for giving us extra time on the show today.
Thanks, Melissa.
And follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper as he continues to follow the team, and much more still ahead later. How the Youth Crisis Center is helping kids and families after the trauma of Hurricane Irma. But up next, another dramatic showdown this week over health care in America and what it means for Florida and your insurance. That's next.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311. Or log on to WJCT.org/parking. Reserve your space today. Join WJCT and Special Forces Association Chapter 88 for an evening watching, listening to, and discussing the many stories of service from the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War and Stories of Service is October 3rd at 7 p.m. at WJCT Studios. For more information and to RSVP for this free event, visit wjct.org/storiesofservice.
And good morning. I'm Kevin Mershar, producer for First Coast Connect here during our fall fun drive. If you've been enjoying this conversation, we talked about all the big issues. That's what comes up. That's what we do here at WJCT. Need to show your support right now. Make a call now, 353-9528. Or go online at wjct.org. Don't forget, we're going to be giving away an Amazon Echo every day of this drive. So it's a good idea to call early because we get a lot of calls at the end of the drive. So if you call early, you call today, you probably got a better chance of winning that Echo than you would, say, on Friday. Make the call now, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. Go online at wjct.org. Every day we bring you great programming here at First Coast Connect with Melissa and I. We're always thinking about, well, what should we talk about today? What issues are the important ones that we want to do for you? That is because it's important to us. I mean, it's very important. We think about every day, what kind of great stories can we get? What will get you to call, make some comments? What's the important stuff going on? We've done a lot of stories. You've heard us today about talking about the Jaguars. We've had a lot of stories on things like the opiate crisis. We've had many shows on that. We did a lot with when Irma was here. That's because it's important to you. We know that's important to you. We know how much this means to you. Well, we're here for you, so we ask you to be here for us as well. So make that call now, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. Go online at wjct.org, and thank you very much for supporting this, your public radio station.
Welcome back. Well, much of the nation was consumed with the drama on NFL playing field Sunday, as we just discussed. But what you might not have noticed, that also on Sunday, there was a last-minute effort in Washington to revive the push to repeal and replace Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act. This is known as the Graham-Cassidy health care bill from Senators Graham and Cassidy. It would give more control to states through block grants when it comes to paying for health insurance. Now, to get the measure through, there's new movement to direct additional funding to two states, Alaska and Maine. And not surprisingly, that's where Senators Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins could cast deciding votes on this Graham-Cassidy bill. Could it pass? And if so, what does it mean for the future of health care coverage here in Florida? Tony Penna is president of Health Systems Technology, LLP, and he's here with his thoughts. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. Okay, so the Graham-Cassidy bill has gone down a couple of times already, and a few weeks ago, we saw Senator John McCain dramatically cast a deciding vote to kill the effort to kill Obamacare. What about this current measure? It's looking as though there may be a push to get this bill through. And Senator Cassidy is saying this would cover folks with pre-existing conditions. It would pass what he famously called the Jimmy Kimmel test.
Right.
A late-night host, Jimmy Kimmel, went on television and said, "My son was born with a pre-existing condition, and I don't want any kid to not get health coverage because they have one." Cassidy said, "Okay, we're going to make sure it passes the Jimmy Kimmel test." Then just the other night, Jimmy Kimmel went back on TV and said, "This measure does not pass the test. You're lying, Senator Cassidy. It's wrong. Don't pass it." Okay, so all of this back and forth, what would this measure do?
Well, I think we probably need to talk about this in terms of what we think and then what we know and then, in my opinion, how we can move forward. So the estimated impacts of Graham-Cassidy are that 32 million people could lose insurance by 2026 and 15 million people could lose insurance within the next year. States,
and that's because of what the states might do, right?
That's correct. States could lose up to $4.1 trillion in federal funding by 2026.
And let's explain what this would do. This would essentially throw the decisions to health care insurance to individual states. States could decide to expand Medicaid or decide to expand coverage or not.
That's absolutely correct. The other thing that Senator Cassidy, when he talks about pre-existing conditions, doesn't say is that the decision around pre-existing conditions goes back to the states as part of the block grant. And the states can then ask for a waiver so that they don't have to cover pre-existing conditions.
And states that decide not to would obviously say their reasoning is we can't afford to do it.
That's absolutely correct, because what's happening is the $4.1 trillion is now cut from their budgets.
Okay. And this bill would allow states, as you said, Tony, to set their own coverage requirements, allow insurers to boost prices on people with serious conditions. It would end the mandate, the most controversial piece of the
yes.
ACA, that the individual mandate that most Americans buy insurance. And it would also stop mandating that companies offer coverage to workers. It would also cut and reshape Medicaid. Now, a vote has to occur this week on the Hill for Republicans to get it through. They have a narrow Senate majority. The push is on this week because next Sunday, protections that are currently in place against a Democratic filibuster, those go away. So if they don't get this done in a week, the Democrats could use procedural tactics to filibuster and stop the measure.
Yeah, I think where we are now in the Senate, and that's, of course, assuming that Senator Collins and Senator Murkowski don't change their mind, is that we have two senators who've come out vocally in opposition to the bill. And that's Rand Paul and John McCain. Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins have come out against the bill, but as you say, there's an effort now going on
To woo them. Yes.
Yes, to woo them with money. But even given that, there's a sense of ambivalence among those Republican supporters of the bill. And if I can, what I'd like to do is quote Senator Grassley from Iowa. This is what a Republican Senator Grassley, who supports the bill, said, "You know, I could give you maybe 10 reasons why this bill shouldn't be considered. But Republicans campaigned on this so often that you have a responsibility to carry out what you said in the campaign. That's pretty much the only reason, as the substance of the bill.
That's what's driving the sense of urgency.
That's what's driving the sense of urgency, exactly. So it would seem to me that assuming Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins don't change their votes to yes, we're going to be back in the same position that we've been in. We're going to be debating the Affordable Care Act. I think, and this is in my opinion now, I think what we probably need to do is take everything that's occurred, put it behind us, and focus on fixing the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act has issues that need to be addressed. Let's do it in a bipartisan fashion. We have Senator Lamar Alexander from Tennessee and Senator Patty Murray from Washington working on a bipartisan bill to fix the ACA, to fix Obamacare. And again, it needs fixing.
And the Republican holdouts in the Senate, Murkowski, Collins, McCain, that's what they've basically been arguing for, too.
Yeah.
Is some sort of fix rather than a repeal, a straight repeal and a new measure altogether. So let's say, though, Tony, that this does pass. What does that mean here in Florida?
Well, the first thing that it means is that Florida is one of 35 states that will immediately lose some federal funding dollars for health care. We don't know what that exact number is yet because the Congressional Budget Office hasn't scored the bill. But we will immediately lose money. It will also throw the decisions around pre-existing conditions and Medicaid expansion to the state. Now, given what's occurred with Governor Scott's position against Medicaid expansion, we can assume, I think, that Medicaid will not be expanded. As a matter of fact, that it will contract. We can also assume, I think, that the state will ask for a waiver for pre-existing conditions. Now, there's a school of thought out there that says that the health insurance companies have already built this into their 2018 product offerings and product pricing. But we won't know until it actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
So what it will create, at least in the state of Florida and 35 to 40 other states, is mass confusion.
Which is not desirable, of course.
Not desirable.
So as we continue to follow this, it is important to stress that you still can get coverage under the current law.
Well, thank you for saying that. Actually,
flawed coverage, controversial coverage, but coverage.
Yes, the open enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act begins November 1st, and that's for 2018 coverage. Now, the president has chosen to reduce advertising funding. So we need to get the word out that, yes, the open enrollment period begins November 1st.
Tony Penna, president of Health Systems Technology, LLP, thanks for joining the show this morning.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Melissa.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ray from Car Talk. You know, for the last 30 years, you've had to put up with this. And we know it's been a struggle. Well, it's time for Car Talk to make room on this station for something new and hopefully a little more professional. You can still listen to us online, but here on the station, we hope you enjoy the next generation of great programs, and thanks.
Join us for the final episode of Car Talk September 30th on 89.9 WJCT.
Great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question.
Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Look at the tears roll down the street.
Welcome back. Well, at some point in our lives, we all suffer some type of trauma. The death of a parent, a job loss, a relocation are all traumatic experiences. Particularly after Hurricane Irma, kids and families in this area, many of them, are dealing with trauma. But studies show that early intervention is key to healing and recovery. And Jacksonville's own Youth Crisis Center is here to help with newly expanded and critical youth and family programs. I spoke about it with Youth Crisis Center CEO Kim Sertivan. Kim Sertivan, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for having me today.
It's important that we talk about this renewed focus that Youth Crisis Center is placing on trauma, particularly trauma in kids. And I think after what the entire state of Florida has just been through with Hurricane Irma, this is timely, unfortunately.
Yes, and it's something that we've been really taking a look at with the population that we served. And for a long time, you know, we've served folks that have been at risk. And what does at risk mean? And so we thought it was really critical for us to look at who are we serving and what services would be best to help them. And when we really looked at this population from children up to young adults and families, you know, something happened in their life that led them to reach out to us. And that something could vary from a divorce to abuse, natural disasters, financial issues. And so when you really look at that, it's something traumatic, something that happened. And there is, you know, interventions to best help them. And so that's what our focus is really looking at now is, yes, maybe something occurred in your life and how can we best assist you? And we have the resources to do that.
Early intervention is key, whether it's children dealing with family dysfunction at home. Trauma can come from natural disasters and displacement, which we're seeing right now in this community.
Absolutely. And I've seen that firsthand. And, you know, even if it didn't happen to you, children talk about it. My son went back to school yesterday and said that they spent the first few minutes of their class going around and talking about what either occurred, what did they see. You know, he could share stories. They've watched it on TV. And so it's very much something that these children are aware. Folks seem to think that they're resilient, and in some way they are, but they also need to make sure that they are taken care of and that they're processing what they're seeing and what they're hearing, because it's extremely important of their long-term outcome.
Now, Youth Crisis Center has some expanded services that you want to educate the community about. What are you working on?
We're working on a new collaboration with Jasmine and Changing Homelessness. We have identified a need in our community to really provide emergency shelter for displaced LGBTQ young adults. And so this collaboration would take the expertise that YCC has in terms of our residential intervention and provide emergency housing for those displaced young adults while partnering with Jasmine that can continue to provide the ongoing support. So particularly, we'll have a 9-bed emergency shelter, which is on our campus, that we're currently looking at renovating, and would provide mental health counseling and life skills support and assistance while continuing that great relationship with Jasmine as a collaborative.
You were, in fact, planning an event like so many other organizations right now. That event has been postponed.
It has been. I think in the wake of Irma and looking at our community, it's a sense of recovery. And as Youth Crisis Center is an expert in crisis intervention, I feel that it's just respectful into our community that we postpone this until November is when we're looking at this event, that we acknowledge what has happened and we were sensitive to those needs of our community. And that's what we're all about. And so it has been postponed due to the concerns that
Sure.
we have.
But as you look forward, going beyond what you're planning for November, what are some other areas of programming that you want people to know about so that they can access what you have to offer?
I would like folks to know that we offer a variety of services, and we're constantly open. We're 24/7, and so if you think that your child is experiencing some concerns, you can call, and we can talk about all the services that we provide. We do now have an outpatient behavioral health program that is looking at serving youth and family members who may be experiencing some signs of mental health issues, depression, trauma, anxiety. School-related
behaviors.
That's
a lot of people right now.
It absolutely is. And one of the things that I think is impactful is that if you have a child, if you as an adult are starting to notice signs and symptoms of mental health issues, if you get help, you help your child, whether your child is in services or not. How you're feeling can affect your child. And I think it's important that we reach out and be able to assist our entire community.
Is demand greater than ever?
Absolutely. There's a lot of critical need when it comes to trying to walk through the insurance world. And I think being able to say, I have a need now and not be waitlisted or not have to go through, you know, all the different types of insurance issues and things of that, it really has made an impact.
So people can access the therapy and the help that's available through Youth Crisis Center without having to use their health insurance.
Correct. Yes. We have 5 programs currently, and 4 of them are at no charge to families. The outpatient behavioral health is sliding scale. We do look at insurance and Medicaid. But the other 4 programs, which stems from our residential crisis care respite program through community counseling, that could be also done in the schools. We have transitional living housing for young adults. All of that is at no charge to the family.
Any other thoughts?
I just really want to take this time to say how proud I am of our community and coming together at this time and just really lending a hand and knowing that we too have, our staff has gone out and has helped our community and helped other fellow agencies rebuild. And I think that's really important.
Kim Sirdavan, the CEO of Youth Crisis Center, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And finally this hour, the Northeast Florida STEM2 Hub has some exciting news. Program Director Kathleen Schofield has been chosen for a national STEM leadership development program. She's one of only 20 people in the country invited to participate. This is exciting news for the local push to get more kids excited about STEM. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. Kathleen Schofield, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
And congratulations. You've been chosen to be part of the National STEM Ecosystems Initiative. Sounds pretty cool.
Thank you. It is. I am so excited for the learning that I'll be getting over the next year and how I can bring fresh ideas back here to our Northeast Florida region and help to implement them in our schools and districts.
And that's what the local STEM2 Hub does. So you've been chosen to participate in the STEM Ecosystems Initiative. This seeks to nurture and scale effective learning opportunities in STEM for all young people. How is what you're going to be learning from being one of these sort of national fellows, how is that going to translate to more kids in our area doing more science and math?
Thanks. That's a great question. And how that is going to translate is I'll be learning about new opportunities, new skills, new programs, and a lot about policy and how to make that work here locally. We've got a unique structure here in Northeast Florida. We have a board that consists of about 15 of our major Jacksonville companies, as well as the 7 superintendents of the school districts and college partners. Those university presidents talk with the superintendents and the business communities, and what we do is we identify gaps and places of need in our local ecosystem. What our work does and what this leadership opportunity will do is empower me to have more resources to be able to connect those pieces and impact the schools. Mm-hmm. I work with people like Maria Hain at the Mosh, Marianne Jacobs of the Girl Scouts of Gateway Council, Mark McComb over at Renaissance Jacks, and we pull together programs as well as partners so that we can reach into the schools and implement programs to fill those gaps.
And it's important to do that because we've got a big gap in this country in terms of getting kids into the STEM pipeline. We're falling behind.
We are, and I'm glad to say that we work with Tina Wirth at the Chamber to help identify where the jobs are going and how robotics and computer science is going to impact really everything. Jacksonville in Northeast Florida has so much to offer, and we have a thriving economy, but if we don't fill that pipeline, that won't continue into the future.
Mm-hmm. And so you're leaving in October for your first get-together with this national initiative. You'll be going to several over the next year.
Yes. The first one is in Kansas City, the first week of October, and we'll be learning a lot more about some of the details. So I feel honored and privileged to have this opportunity and to be able to bring this directly back here to our seven-county region.
Exciting, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Kathleen Schofield heads up the Northeast Florida STEM 2 Hub. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board. This show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen to us there anytime or on iTunes. You can also catch the rebroadcast of this program tonight at 8 o'clock and every night at 8 o'clock. Next on 1A, a closer look at the Alabama Senate race. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
And good morning. I'm Kevin Merschart, producer for First Coast Connect, here asking for your support during this, our fall fun drive. Give us a call right now. Thank you. 353-9528 or go online at wjct.org. Every day we try to bring you important stories here on First Coast Connect, give you great topics to discuss. We do that with you because we know it's important to you. Plenty of times I run into people say, oh my God, so happy that First Coast Connect is here, so popular, how much you enjoy the show and listening to Melissa and taking your calls and all the things that we do to bring you a show every day. It's a lot of work, but we love doing that. That's why it's important that you call and show your support. And hey, don't forget, we are giving away an Amazon Echo each day of this drive. So if you give a call right now, you can be placed into the drawing with that. We're also going to give away an Echo Show from everyone who participates when Friday 6 p.m. is when the drive ends. So give the call now and show your support. Once again, 353-9528. If you enjoy all the programs we bring you, we brought you a great programming. You know, during Irma, we were here for you. And we put a lot of hours in. And what we was thinking is, but how many people called in and just said thank you for being here? That we were giving the voice to a lot of people who basically this is all they had. I mean, we were it. I mean, their power was out. They had their little portable radio, and that's what they had to tune into to get the information out to you. And that's what we did. We really enjoy it. It's always important to show support for all the programs you like. Make that call now. Thank you very much for your support. Once again, the number is 353-9528. Or you can go online at wjct.org. It's quick. It's easy. It's simple. We bring you all the news you want here on the air. We have wjctnews.com to bring you all the news on the web. So make it now. 353-9528. And thank you for your support.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.